So Tuesday morning, of course, means Tuesday Book Club. It's been a little while between because Andrew has, well, you've been away, haven't you, Andrew?
I have, yeah. Just enjoyed a weekend out of Sydney, a bit of an extended long weekend type of thing. A bit of time for reading, though.
Watch out. What do we want to talk about today?
Look, I was thinking, Nick, have you ever noticed how things like books seem to come at you in strangely synchronous groupings? And before you say anything, I want to remind the listeners that Nick is the person who introduced me to the genre of Wyoming sheriff action mystery type thing. So I think it's safe to say he knows a thing or two about book grouping together.
I do.
Well, anyway, last time I joined you for the book club, we discussed the thought-provoking historical novel The Book of Dirt by Bram Presser. Incidentally, if you missed my conversation with Bram on Saturday, you can listen back on 2SER.com.
You should, indeed, on the final draft.
Bram's actually kind of, he was really brilliant. It's such a great discussion. But anyway, so look, it seems historical novels are my thing for September.
I'm on board.
I'm currently reading Christina Stead's The Little Hotel for the next Aussie Classics Book Club next Saturday. But today I've got City of Crows, which is the latest from award-winning Melbourne writer Chris Womersley.
Okay.
Yeah. So this historical novel takes us to an entirely different era, all the way back to 17th century France and a world of superstition and witchcraft.
Ooh.
Yeah. Before we go any further, I've got a different type of language warning. I apologise in advance for any mangling of French pronunciations. Over the next couple of minutes, I suffer from distinctly Australian vowels.
Comfortable with that, I'm the same.
Okay. So, City of Crows. Charlotte Picot lives in the village of St. Giles. I've already done it, I know. And as the novel begins, she's forced to flee her village with her son following the death of her husband from the plague. So plague is hitting this area of the country not far from Lyon.
Right.
On the road, they're waylaid and her son is kidnapped by traders who are going to sell him into servitude or worse. Left for dead, Charlotte is rescued by an old woman who saves her through the use of magic, or what we might now call medicine. She's bequeathed the old woman's book of knowledge and her witch's knife. Charlotte embarks on a journey to Paris to rescue her son, but not before invoking the devil to send her a guide and protector. She's then thrown into the path of Adam de Couret. He's recently released from the galley and convinces him that she is a powerful witch, and together they travel to Paris to rescue Nicholas, her son.
I'm already in love with this.
Yeah. So, well, look, I'm wondering, though, at this point, if you, Nick, or maybe anyone, is asking themselves about the role of magic and the mystical in the novel. I feel like this could be a sticking point, and it was a big sticking point for me as I progressed through the opening chapters.
Okay.
So Charlotte relies on forest magic. It's this kind of rustic set of knowledge based around natural remedies, superstition, and a healthy understanding of biology, particularly female biology. Adam is also magical. He was convicted of heresy and relies on his charm and his tarot deck to swindle people and bend them to his will. I remind you, this is a historical novel. So this is situating itself at a time when magic was very real to people, even if what we might sort of think in our super, in our heavily special affected world, magic is really a confection. So there are several telling moments in this book where a scare quote spell is cast, or a fortune told, and Womersley weaves the narrative around these arcs to allow for both the mystical and the logical to prevail.
Oh, I love that.
It gives the story a gravity that it might not have possessed had he simply chosen to wholly adopt or reject the presence of magic entirely. It's got you questioning. In the 17th century, it was a time when magic was real, at least for those who lived with minimal education and insufficient science to understand the nature of the tricks that they were witnessing. The credulity of the audience means the spell can be cast and take hold, having an effect on the narrative purely through the psychology of belief. So events happen and broad predictions are made, and then when something accords with those predictions, people sort of say, it was the spell.
It was the magic.
The magic. And Womersley does this to great effect in the book, which means you never are completely, well, you've lost me because I thought I was reading something historical, or I did like that you had a little bit of the mystery. It kept me going. There's also something of a rumination on the nature of women's power and the knowledge and lack of legitimacy that it held for most people at the time. Charlotte's mystical education is as much about her asserting and maintaining her position against a world, read men, who would see her a subject to their will rather than a person asserting her own will. This interplay of action and superstition was what it made the book for me. It was really what kept me reading. If anything, I was disappointed that Womersley didn't wax philosophical to a greater degree, because I felt like he was on the cusp of some really interesting discussions about the nature of power and how people can be held in thrall to someone who simply tells us what we think we want to hear.
Okay, I am just absolutely loving the way you've sold this on me.
Yeah, it's... There's a few things that you're going to like. I really haven't talked up the historical side of things. He really well situates it. I know that Chris Womersley went, he spent a lot of time in France researching the novel, and the historical side of things plays very well. But what really grabbed me, and I'll be excited to speak to Chris about this for final draft in the future, is how much he wanted to explore this psychological side of things, how superstition and magic played into people's beliefs and the way education may be a foil against belief, but then also a path to power, particularly for women. Because remember, the 17th century, we are looking at women being almost wholly subject to men's will. There are some really strong female characters in the book, and it's interesting to see how they exert their power, but they have to exert it in an almost clandestine way. And so you have the sorceresses and the witches juxtaposed against the more powerful men, like, you know, the men at court and the king and that sort of thing.
So it sounds like there's a lot of different narrative themes running through it. I think what the way you described how he discusses sort of magic, science and whatever that is, I like that ambiguity. There's an author called John Connolly, and he's got a series of novels, a mystery called the Charlie Parker series. And Charlie may be being haunted by the ghost of his wife and child, or he may just be incredibly depressed and having an almost psychotic break. It's never well explained and it's never defined. And I think that's really nice. I like it not having to be said, this is explicitly supernatural or this is not. It's up to me to decide.
Yeah, that sort of deus ex machina. We are forever ghosts in our own machine, and our mediation of the world is wholly subject to the way we understand it, and we can be sort of at the whim of fancies that may not be completely real. And I like the way Chris does that. Like I said, this is what made the book for me. He could have explored this in any time period, and historically, it's a really interesting one. So, City of Crows, yeah. Look, I would say get out and read it. It's a really interesting exploration. Chris is a fantastic writer. I also recommend Cairo, which was his previous novel of a few years back. Very different novel, but I think Chris is a writer that you're rewarded just for reading him.
All right, get out and have a read of City of Crows. Now, we have time for one more book club before we enter into Supporter Drive. What do you want to talk about next week?
Okay, so I had a few options, and then just today,
out of nowhere,
not long before I came into the studio, I received my copy of Mirror Sydney by Vanessa Berry. Really eagle-eyed listeners, Alliard, yeah,
sure.
Would recognise Vanessa. She was one of the first people I interviewed on Final Draft all those years ago for her book 99, which looked at Sydney in the 90s.
Okay.
And Mirror Sydney is her exploration of sort of a different type of Sydney and a way of seeing and exploring the hidden sides of our city. I've been really excited to hear it. You can follow Vanessa on mostly on Instagram. She does amazing photography around Sydney of just these hidden, surprising places.
All right. I'm absolutely sold. We will talk about that next week. And until then, if people want a little more Final Draft.
A little more Final Draft, 2SER.com, of course. That's where the interviews are. Catch up with Bram, catch up with everyone. And then Aussie Classics Book Club coming up this Saturday.
That will be a lot of fun. Andrew Bebel.
10 a.m. Did I say 10 a.m.?
You did say 10 a.m. You did just then, at the very least. Andrew Bebel, thank you very much.
Thanks, Nick.
And we'll do this again this time next week.